Okay, let's unpack this. We have a massive stack of sources today, and they really paint a detailed picture of Europe at, well, a geopolitical crossroads.
Yeah, it seems like it.
The common thread, pressure. Lots of it.
Yeah.
Pressure on budgets, pressure on internal political stability, and definitely pressure to step into these big global leadership roles, roles that maybe others held before.
And what we really want to do here is distill the concrete details for you. You know, the dollars, the percentages, the specific strategic shifts basically show how this transition is actually playing out.
Right.
Because Europe is like simultaneously navigating three incredibly tough situations. First, there's managing this new reality in global health after a big U.S. retreat. Second, dealing with the fallout from a really destabilizing political crisis in France. And third, trying to figure out how to actually use its leverage, which is pretty immense in the Gaza peace process.
So we're diving into these three, let's call them high-stakes shifts. We'll kick off with the budget constraints, how they're kind of crippling Europe's response to the vacuum in global health. Then we'll look at France. Why is this historic political mess hitting European strategic cohesion so hard?
A really key question.
And finally, we'll turn to the Middle East. What are the powerful tools the EU actually holds there? And, crucially, why is one specific German doctrine proving to be the main barrier to using them? All right, let's start with global health. The renewed U.S. withdrawal from the World Health Organization and just wider global health cooperation.
No.
This time it's not being seen as temporary, is it?
No, not at all. The speed and scale of the U.S. retreat, it seems to have genuinely shocked policy circles. It really laid bare just how dependent global coordination was on, well, U.S. financial muscle.
Mm.
And this immediately creates space, doesn't it, for new players. And it fundamentally complicates Europe's intended role. The first major shift we're seeing is the rise of the Global South.
Yeah.
Their voice is just louder now, more effective.
Yeah.
Especially when demanding equity. You see this clearly in the pandemic agreement talks.
Mm-hmm.
The Africa group and LMICs, that's low and middle income countries, they're pushing really hard for a pathogen access and benefit sharing system.
Right. PABS.
Exactly. And, you know, this isn't just talk. The African Union got permanent G20 membership back in 2023.
Right.
That gives that whole bloc real financial clout now.
And naturally, China is also stepping into the breach. We're seeing initiatives like its Health Silk Road, targeted vaccine diplomacy. But here's the rub, isn't it? While Europe historically is a major donor, you know, combine the UK, Germany, Japan, France, and their spending often tracks pretty close behind the US.
Sure, traditionally.
Our sources are really clear that Europe just lacks the current financial capacity to stabilize this alone. We know the war in Ukraine, rising defense costs, those domestic refugee accommodation costs, they're all hitting budgets at the same time. It's exactly. These massive pressures, external and internal, they've led to cuts pretty much across the board. And global health programs seem to be suffering, well, disproportionately. We're seeing a major budget retreat across key European players.
Let's take the UK. They've effectively, downgraded themselves to a constrained middle power. They slashed ODA, that's official development assistance, their foreign aid relative to GNI, gross national income, slashed it from 0.7% down to 0.5% back in 2021. And the plan is to go even lower, down to 0.3% by 2027.
And that 0.3%, that's just the headline number. If you look deeper, development assistance specifically for health was cut by a huge 39% in 2025 alone.
Wow, 39%.
Yeah. And to give you a really concrete example of this retreat, the UK's latest pledge to Gavi, the Global Vaccine Alliance, it was $1.25 billion. Sounds like a lot, but it's actually a 40% cut compared to what they committed just back in 2020. A 40% cut to Gavi. That's huge. Wait, so if the UK, you know, traditionally one of the big anchors in development aid, is pulling back that drastically, how does that gap even get filled? Or does the shift in leadership matter more? Like maybe leadership moving from London, Paris, Oslo towards Berlin matters more than the total dollars lost.
That's really the key strategic question right now. Germany is certainly trying to position itself as the global health anchor. They host that high-profile WHO expert hub in Berlin.
Right.
And interestingly, despite cutting their overall ODA budget, they fell below the 0.7% target because of austerity measures. They did pledge an extra $10 million, about $11.4 million, back in May 2025. That was specifically to backfill gaps left by the U.S. exit.
So a targeted injection of cash?
Yes, but they're kind of the exception right now. France, they're set to reduce ODA to 0.38% of GNI by 2026. They'll be the lowest in nearly a decade for them, and they abolished their specific solidarity fund. Norway also reduced its Gavi commitment by 20%, so the trend is mostly downwards.
Okay, so as the financial ability to lead shrinks, Europe essentially changes the narrative. It stops being about development aid and starts being framed as security.
Precisely.
Yeah.
It's all about security and resilience now. That's the framing. Moving away from traditional development cooperation, the EU's HRA, the Health Emergency Preparedness and Response Authority, set up in 2021, that's really the focal point for this shift.
HRA, right.
By classifying investments in things like countermeasures and surveillance as security spending, well, it helps justify HRA's budget, and it feeds into the EU's bigger idea of strategic autonomy, but now applied to public health.
And what's fascinating, too, is how this financial retreat seems to be speeding up the debate about geography, about where global health governance actually happens. You're saying the U.S. retreat pushes things away from Geneva being the sole hub towards something more polycentric.
Absolutely. It accelerates that trend. We're seeing decentralization happening pretty fast, more authorities going to regional offices and to the like 800-plus WHO collaborating centers around the world. Staff are relocating. We see new hubs popping up or gaining importance. Berlin, of course, but also Lyon, Dubai, even Jamnagar in India. You know, even highly technical meetings, like the ones that decide on seasonal flu vaccine strains. They move this year from Geneva to London. So yeah, the old model, the single, centralized global health capital, it feels like it's dissolving under all this pressure.
That's a massive structural shift, really forced by external events. Okay, let's pivot now from external pressures to an internal crisis that threatens to undermine even those maybe more modest security-focused budget commitments. Let's talk about the complete political disarray in France. This isn't about resource constraints from outside. This feels like the engine of the EU itself is sputtering.
This is the real danger, yes. France is going through, well, historic political instability. President Macron is trying to form his sixth government in just 2 years, all stemming from this protracted parliamentary crisis.
Sixth government, wow.
And the problem is, this instability severely weakens the EU's strategic hand. Why? Because it effectively paralyzes the Franco-German relationship. And that relationship, recently revitalized, you know, with things like the Joint Council of Ministers in Toulon.
Yeah.
It's the absolute institutional core of the union.
So if the EU is a vehicle, the Franco-German partnership is like the engine. Both cylinders need to be firing for things to move forward.
Pretty much. And without stability in Paris, major joint defense initiatives, think FCAS, the Future Combat Air System, or MGCS, the main ground combat system, these huge next-gen defense programs, they risk immediate stagnation.
Yeah.
Just grinding to a halt.
And what's the consequence then? Does Berlin just get forced to act alone or maybe seek less reliable partners?
That's the risk. It could compel Berlin to go it alone or seek other alliances, which ultimately weakens the EU's collective ability to speak with one voice on massive issues like Ukraine or how to deal with China.
Mm-hmm.
And France, is often called the natural think tanker for the Union, right? Generating big ideas like strategic autonomy. But its ability to actually set the agenda in Brussels is being seriously eroded by this domestic chaos. And that's even though the French president traditionally has pretty free rein on foreign policy.
And beyond just the strategic vision, this political instability holds crucial defense spending hostage, doesn't it? France has massive fiscal problems, a 5.8% GDP budget deficit, national debt at 114% of GDP.
Huge numbers.
They desperately need to invest more in defense, meet NATO targets, modernize. But those planned increases, like the extra $3.5 billion, bringing the total to $6.7 billion earmarked for defense in 2026. Money for ammunition, drones, filling capability gaps, all of that is now gravely threatened by political gridlock.
And this raises a really critical security question for the entire continent. If this crisis drags on, or if it empowers extremists, what happens if a resulting government, maybe led by a sovereigntist party like the far-right National Rally, actively starts blocking key European defense priorities?
That sounds extremely likely if they gain power. A paralyzed France, or worse, a France led by a truly Euroskeptic government. It wouldn't just be a spoiler like we sometimes see with Hungary slowing things down. It could be a wrecking ball for the Union's entire capacity to act, especially on critical things like support for Ukraine or competitiveness reforms.
Exactly. And crucially, there's no other European nation that could just easily step into France's diplomatic shoes, you know?
Yeah.
Because of its unique position, its nuclear deterrent, its permanent seat on the UN Security Council. So stability in Paris really is stability for Europe's entire ability to project power abroad. It's all interconnected.
Okay, so let's shift focus again from internal EU politics to an area where Europe is let's be honest, often accused of acting with the least unity, the Middle East. Our sources suggest the EU holds some incredibly powerful non-military cards it could play, specifically regarding the proposed Gaza peace plan, provided it can finally overcome its own internal divisions.
Yeah, for 2 years now, the EU has been pretty much paralyzed on this, mostly because one major member state, Germany, has provided unwavering diplomatic cover and historically significant weapons exports to Israel. This is all under its Staatsraison doctrine.
Can you just quickly explain Staatsraison again?
Sure. It translates literally as reason of state. But in practice, it's essentially a fundamental principle, almost constitutional, linking Germany's core national interests directly to Israel's security. It stems, of course, from Germany's historic responsibility following the Holocaust. And this doctrine makes using any kind of leverage against Israeli policy extremely difficult politically in Berlin.
Right. But despite that paralysis, Commission President von der Leyen has proposed a clear threefold plan to try and operationalize the EU's leverage. What are the key parts?
Okay, so first, putting bilateral EU support to Israel on hold. Second, sanctioning extremist Israeli ministers and violent settlers, and this is key, partially suspending the trade component of the EU-Israel Association Agreement. And third, setting up a new Palestine donor group, presumably for post-conflict rebuilding efforts.
That second point, the trade suspension, that sounds like the real stick.
It is. That trade component of the Association Agreement is potentially as powerful a tool as U.S. military aid. Why? Because the EU is Israel's single biggest trading partner. Suspending parts of that agreement would significantly hurt the Israeli economy.
And the EU wouldn't be starting from scratch on the ground either, right?
No, exactly. The EU already has indispensable civilian missions in place that would be vital for any stabilization effort. There's EU-BAM Rafah, that's the border assistance mission, helping manage the Gaza crossing. And there's UPO-KPPS, which supports the Palestinian police and rule of law efforts. These missions are already there, ready to be scaled up, crucial for security and institutions in any post-conflict scenario.
Okay, but the big question is always the internal division. Are we seeing any signs that the resistance, particularly perhaps from Germany, to using this leverage is softening?
There are definitely signs, yeah. Italy's Prime Minister Meloni, for instance, announced Italy would vote for sanctions, calling the ongoing war unacceptable. That's a significant shift from her. And even within Germany, public opinion seems to be shifting quite dramatically. One recent poll showed 62% of Germans now think Israel is committing genocide in Gaza.
62%.
Yeah. And even senior German politicians are using stronger language. Foreign Minister Wadefuhl recently described the situation in Gaza as hell on earth. So the mood is changing.
But changing mood isn't the same as changing policy, especially when it comes to Staatsraison.
True. While technically a qualified majority in the EU Council is sufficient to adopt something like the trade suspension, Germany's approval is really seen as crucial for the measure to carry genuine diplomatic weight. And right now, Berlin seems to be delaying its decision, perhaps hoping external factors might resolve the crisis first.
So the critical challenge for Germany is?
It's fundamentally intellectual, I think. They need to find a way to redefine what their historic responsibilities mean in this context. Does that responsibility now extend to helping Israel navigate out of the strategic catastrophe created in Gaza? And can they get comfortable with the idea of using, you know, power dynamics, even leverage, with a close ally when it's deemed necessary for a shared strategic goal? That's the hurdle.
Okay, let's try and synthesize all this. What does this deep dive really tell us about Europe right now? We've seen that in global health, Europe is sort of being forced to transition from being the financial backup singer, maybe, to becoming more of a political and normative leader. But that shift is being seriously undermined by budget cuts pretty much everywhere.
Right. Less money, more need for political leadership.
Then, in its immediate neighborhood, strategic stability really hinges on the health of that Franco-German engine. And right now, that engine is sputtering badly because of France's internal political chaos.
Yep, internal weakness radiating outwards.
And finally, in the Middle East, the EU actually has powerful tools, trade leverage, civilian missions on the ground, but actually using them effectively seems blocked by Germany needing to potentially change a foundational doctrine of its foreign policy.
So it connects us to the bigger picture. Mm. Europe really does seem to be at a strategic crossroads. You have these external pressures, the U.S. retreat, the crisis in Gaza colliding with internal crises like the French paralysis. Mm. And this is forcing Europe to either figure out and solidify a new, perhaps more polycentric way of governing itself and acting globally,
or
risk drifting back into fragmentation,
yeah.
becoming less relevant precisely when global dynamics seem to demand more unity and more decisive action from Europe.
So here's maybe a final thought for you, the listener, to mull over. Given this current geopolitical environment, you know, the U.S. pulling back, France maybe paralyzing its own defense budget, is Europe's long-stated goal of strategic autonomy just? Is it fiscally and politically impossible right now? Or maybe will these combined crises actually force Europe to finally find new, maybe non-financial ways to lead on the world stage? Something to think about as you process this deep dive.